know how that rolls.
Get ready for the
Ocelli
effect.
I'm a big fan of the show.
Chuck Ocelli, and he's been known for many years as a blind PFK researcher specializing in intelligence agency involvement in multiple assassinations, propaganda, and other global criminal operations in the 20th and 21st centuries.
Your listeners are extremely fortunate to have you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media.
Chuck Ocelli! Yeah!
November 30, 2018, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, and this indeed is the Ocelli Effect, broadcast live from the facility of Ocelli.com, but also heard in a variety of other places, and who knows, progress with Apple just a bit, we might actually get back in the iTunes store. I'm not holding my breath with those people over there, but anyway... It is Friar's Day, according to the Pope's work schedule. But, you know, the fact that I noted that it was November and that it's allegedly the 30th day and it's allegedly November and it is that thing we call a calendar seems completely appropriate to bring on a longtime individual who used to do a show with called Ocelli and the Greek, a longtime individual involved with these broadcasts on this network. And other places where I've been, and I am extremely happy to welcome the Greek tonight. Because, you know, after all, he shows up, unlike Jefferson Morley, who did not bother to show up last night. Anyway, here's the deal. I told you what the date is according to that thing we call a calendar, but, Greek, help me out. What day is it actually?
Well, I'm not showing up. I'm sonicking up.
That's true, too.
There's no show here. And I don't know. What day, well, we're already into the 10th month, you know. And we used to – I heard you say, you know, we used to do a show. How about we news to do a show?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, as for new versus used.
Gotcha.
But here's the interesting part. Well, this is an intercalary year. Look it up. It's a big word for most people, intercalary. But the first week of the 10th month is over. Look, November, Nov means nine. December, deci means 10,
last
right? September means 7, octo means 8, octopussy, right? So, means 8. So, liven up, people. You know, you got 3 strikes, you're out, you're back on the gate, you're back on the next inning because you struck out, 3 strikes, you're out. Anybody ever talk about 4 strikes? 4 strikes, you're done. You're not coming back on the next inning. That's why you got the 4 months that are listed in almost proper order, even though they're still arbitrary. Mm. You ever notice multiple choice question and answer tests are 4 questions, not 3, right? You ever notice you got a thumb and 4 opposing members, right? You lose the thumb, you lose the rest. But anyway, use of most of them. So the thing is, no, the 4 strikes you're out principle doesn't mean you're coming back. And this is always being put in front of everyone. You're not going to come back the way you are, the way you've been doing business as usual. You know, I noticed on the bumper you had, you know what, criminal corruption. These criminals or corrupt or whatever, they can't do jack, they can't do like stew knots without the people backing them up. So who's the real criminal? You want to know who the real criminal is? Use a mirror. As a matter of fact, use 2 mirrors. But anyway.
Well, that is the beauty of it. Some people come down on me a little hard for criticizing the leader, you know, but the fact is that it just so happens that is the representative that does represent.
Well, the thing is, I'm always speaking on a basic scriptural term. Like, for example, in a certain book of wisdom, it says never curse the leader of a people. But you know what? You don't know who's leading you.
Isn't that?
I assure you that. 100%. Let's say 150% for the other 50% that you don't know about. So, because you're under what's called an administration. Hey, you want to have a little fun? We used to do a show versus used, you know, new versus used. Okay. Go to Edom Online. Maybe I should drop this on the, what I'll do is I'm going to copy the link. And I'm going to drop it in the – let's see, what am I open on the other computer? I'm going to drop the link on the Ocelli chat.
We do have a live chat room for the people listening. We do have a live chat room at Ocelli.com, which goes along with all the shows. And, yep, you're putting a link in there now.
Because I still think you're politically minded to some extent, which leads back to what's called federal government to some extent. I want you to click on that link I just dropped on the Ocelli chat. And you, Chuck, I want you to just read the first 10 words or so for the definition of federal. Just the first 7 or 8 words, maybe 10 words.
Well, sure. Now, to do that, I'm going to take my mic out of the stand. Because
oh, are you? Never mind.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Listen, it's fine.
Because it has like 70% more punch. I don't know why when somebody else reads it.
Well, would you like me to start with the secular meaning? Or would you like me to start with the top?
Top. Federal, it's an adjective. Go ahead, 1640s. Go ahead.
Gotcha. Federal, adjective. 1640s, as a theological term, parentheses, in reference to, quote, covenants, end quote, between God and man, end parentheses.
Stop. If the secular took precedent, why wouldn't they start off the meaning with the secular, right?
Obviously.
Because the spiritual, this trumps the secular meaning. It's the secular meaning, secular, whenever you see the word secular, just replace it with the word dumbed down or dumbed up. That's all that means. So,
well, and anything placed first in a body of written work is usually the most important key information. For instance, if you look at a news story in a typical newspaper, the way they used to print them, what did they teach us in basic journalism? You have to put the who, what, when, where, why, and how in that very first paragraph. You lead with the essentials of the information first, don't you?
I'd say so.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
What's interesting about this, let's go back to the Sonics we did a few years ago. Has it been that long? Yes. How many times have I said that your law comes from your God and all these countries have patron or matron deities and no one is addressing them? Because if you start addressing them, then you might try to figure out what's the root to the problem or the root to the solution or whatever you want to call a root cause of something, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we gone over that, right? It's all a spiritual back thing, right? So here you go. That's why you're patriotic. What does patros mean? Latin and Greek means father.
Right.
Right? So, anyway, I think we've gone over how patriots, you know, when you hang around to some patriots and you know what you're going to get? You're going to get it doesn't matter what country. You're going to get the language of stupidity, ignorance, hate, war, greed. You ever notice that? You want me to go why?
Hate. Sure, why not?
Yeah, these guys are, they don't like us, right? Because we're this country. There's your hate. War. Oh, yeah, we kicked these guys in the ass, or we got to watch out because these guys want to kick it, right? Ignorance. Do they know anything about what even the definition of the terms that they're using are or their history? No.
Well, this leads me to an interesting question in my own mind, which, by the way, I have some listener questions as well I want to get to before we're done here tonight. But in my own mind, you know, considering that you brought it up, nationalism is one of these things that is being discussed quite frequently in a lot of circles right now. And it seems to me as though people don't understand the meaning of the word nation to begin with. And they don't understand the concept which is being placed in front of them, although they are continuing to argue over it. What are your thoughts on nation and nationalism?
Well, let's fast forward without skipping it, but skipping it in a sense.
Sure.
There's a guy called Daniel Estulin, Estulin. He wrote the popular book, not the first book, on the Bilderbergers. I'm not endorsing him. He's very censored, but he makes some really good points. Mm. What you see on the world political scene now, doesn't matter what country, you have two basic factions that are based on the credit-based economy. One is the conservative nationalism economy, which is where each country protects its own economy. Then you have the globalist liberal banking economy, which the whole world should just be under one economy, right? Okay. So, for example, the Trumps, the Putins, the former leaders in the Middle East, and all these guys were all national, you know, the old conservative, you know, where you have tariffing and all this to protect, you know, nationalism. Then you have like the Clintons, the Soroses, the guys, the leaders of Germany and France today, you know, the political leaders. Those are all the globalist groups that want to put everything under one umbrella, right? So this is what's going on behind the scenes. I like what he says, like Trump is not a man, he's a project. He needs to be examined like a dinosaur. You put him under a microscope and you sniff him, probe him, look at him real close, and you'll see that there's no such thing as Donald Trump. There's no such thing as Hillary Clinton. There's no such thing as George Soros. There's an ideology behind all these political people and that trumps the personality and character of the person, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, what I'm trying to say, it doesn't matter who's in power, it's what ideology they have. You see, like the headhunter analogy, I've given that before. You run into a headhunter and he shows up with a bag of five shrunken heads and you say, hey, does it bother you? You got five shrunken heads in a bag? And he says, hey, no one ever asked me that question. As a matter of fact, it does bother me that I have five shrunken heads in the bag. And you say, why? Why? Because my brother, he's got 20 shrunken heads in a bag. Now, it doesn't matter which headhunter you ask. It's the ideology that shrunken heads mean. You know, you see what I mean?
Well, see, so now, to us, there's one problem with this, and I need to interject here for one very specific reason. I think it's something that a lot of people fail to understand, including Estulin, who, by the way, I did offer to have on as a guest and now will not have him as a guest because he has fallen into this very bizarre trap in my mind. And I'm not saying that I necessarily endorse everything.
Many traps. He's very censored.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
that point, it doesn't mean you can't take one. You could walk into a really bad store or venue, and it doesn't mean that everything is bad. You could pick something off the shelf, right?
Oh no. But listen, if you start going to every aisle and you can find five, six things of, let's just say it's a food store and five or six things in every aisle are rotten, I'm leaving the store. So
yeah, maybe it's not worth going back ever.
Yeah, so that's the thing with Estulin that I see at this point is that in every aisle he's got a bunch of rotten products. And here's why.
Yeah, I agree.
The issue, and again, this is not personal. This is a matter of the information he's putting out.
And
I'm looking at it. You know, I'm trying to be objective about it. Personally, I don't even know him. I've only interacted with him briefly. So I have no personal judgment about this man. I'm just talking about his information. The logical trap that is eluding people who make these arguments very similar to his as well is that, when you're taking a look at the Trump avatar, so to speak, there is no consistent, clearly defined ideology. That's the interesting part about this. He has shifted over and over again. His history does not prove out that there is a consistency to the ideology.
Well, that's why I said he's censored. But go ahead, finish up, and I'm gonna land the point. That's why I'm speaking on this.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
Words, instead of Estulin. What you get out of Estulin can be condensed down to less than what, 30 seconds? Like I said, the rest is a dummy load. Now I'm going to tell you why.
Oh sure, but I want to make this point and then allow you to wrap it back around because I think it's going to work perfectly. Here's what happens. See, and I'll give an example really briefly. There are certain shifting ideas here. He wants the FBI, which is totally corrupt and, you know, undermined and completely ridiculous, to go after his political enemies because that's a worthy thing for the corrupt organization to do. Right there, you have a built-in counterintuitive statement, don't you? Okay, so let's put that aside and just assume that that's something maybe I'm just, you know, picking.
No, but it doesn't matter if he said, but the FDA is even more powerful than the FBI, believe it or not. In firepower as well, believe it or not. People don't know this. But here's the aspect of it. It doesn't matter which agency. The minute you rely on an agency, you fell for the trap, and I'll explain that trap. Go ahead.
No, certainly. But outside of that, what I'm saying is that when you take a look at a consistency, when it comes to an ideology that can be sort of codified into something that could be related from one person to another, the inconsistencies are so numerous. When it comes to this guy's actions, when it comes to the changing his position essentially based on his personal position in the equation, you see that you have somebody who is not part of a standard ideology. He's there to do a job, certainly, and he's definitely an avatar, and I agree with those sorts of points. But for somebody to tell me that this guy is actually, in truth, a nationalist or someone who is anti-globalist is ridiculous. And this is the thing about that equation that I think people fail to understand in all of the background noise of what goes on regarding reporting and analysis, which nobody ever really does anyway, but they attempt to or present it as analysis. The fact is, there's such an inconsistency here that it is difficult for anyone to truly articulate what his ideology is. And he is not alone. There is a contingent of individuals whose ideology shifts based on merely what is beneficial to them. And that is the only thing that I can find consistent in their ideology, in air quotes. But
yeah.
Please continue on with that point.
Okay, very simply. When I brought up the two, they're not in essence, independent ideologies, the globalists and the nationalists. They're just two ways of what I call livestock management or policy, public policies. Those are two public policies, which neither one is lawful, right?
Oh, no,
now, from if you're going to take it down to the basic aspect, it doesn't matter which, whether you're looking at, you know, the Trump or whatever ideology you see in the world today, it's criminal and corrupt. And I'm not talking about the leaders. That's the way that, you know, the people think, right? Now, this is the very simple point. All of the points that have been brought up, especially in mainstream and alternative media, are fraudulent points. For example, the main point you're going to hear very often brought up by Estulin and whoever else is the concept of debt and money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why the people are so ignorant is because all the information that can help them solve what they think is a problem is in the public library.
Mm-hmm.
Should I say that again? If you want to hide, let me say it a different way. If you want to hide something, where do you put it? In the public library. Why? I'm not going to answer. That's a rhetorical question. You know why. Because no one wants to. Everybody looks at each other and they have consensus reality. This crowd says this. I agree with them. That, and this is the truth, not that crowd over there. So anyway.
Right. Quick test for American listeners. It's very, very simple. Ready? Don't look it up. Don't look at your phone. Don't look at a computer. Tell me, where's your local library to where you're standing, sitting right now?
Right. Now, the problem with that is the libraries, again, I'm not against the feds or anything, but they're easy to pick at, just like the Pope or the doctors or the lawyers, because they're just so ridiculous, right? It doesn't mean they're not dangerous. You could go into a tropical rainforest and see this beautiful, ridiculous bug that, you know, will kill you with its venom. That's what I'm talking about, right? They're still dangerous. Now here's the interesting point. Everything that's discussed is fraudulent. Like anything money-wise is fraudulent. Anything health-wise that you hear is fraudulent. Political-wise, health, historically, is fraudulent. It's false. But it's twisted enough to seem like the truth to a twisted reality that's accepted by the population. Again, consensus reality. Estulin speaks a lot on this debt principle. There is no debt. Now, if you go to the library, let's say a law library, and you look up everything that has to do with monetary policy and law, you'll see there is no money. It's very clear. You could look at Senate and congressional hearings. You could look at the history of the mid-1900s regarding central banking, and you'll see that the entire thing is a fraud. Now, meaning it's all based on credit. Now, here's the interesting aspect of it. You ready? The problem with with Estulin, Trump, or anybody discussing politics is this. When you try to hinge your head or hinge what they're discussing on a certain ideology, you won't find one. The reason why you won't find a solid ideology other than what's a cultural meme, like this culture does things a certain way.
Right. No, I totally understand where you're going with this. You disappear sound-wise.
Excuse me, I had a coughing fit there.
No
for
problem.
A second. But here's why. Because years ago, conquest, let's just jump around here. Years ago, conquest was done by an overt conqueror, and you had what's called overt empire. And the last bit of that was, let's say, the Ottomans, the Russian, the Austrian-Hungarians, you know, the English. Okay, well, they found out that if you overtly conquer a people, there's always going to be some kind of revolution, which is also a fraud because you can't have a revolution without substance industry and all that backing you up. And guess what? All that belongs to the empire anyway. So they just have to change the way the window dressing looks. There are no legitimate revolutions, by the way. They're all frauds also. And that's a long thesis. It's a tall statement to make, but it's a thesis that can be proven if you do. Anyone who wants to either verify or deny that statement can validate either that it's true that revolutions are fraudulent by looking at the concurrent history after a revolution, right? Mm. Even the Who wrote a song about it, meet the new boss, same as the, right?
Of course.
Old boss. Okay. Now, this thing about overt conquest it seemed to not end up well, and it also depleted the conquerors. So the best way was to, behind the scenes, divvy up the entire planet, right, amongst the nobility that always has been in place anyway, because they were looked up to anyway, you see. Mm. You get what I mean? These people are not historical figures. Some of them are, by the way. And they were always looked up to anyway. So they said they put the ball in their court as owners of the entire planet divided by various districts or whatever you want to call it, right? That's why when you look into several old institutions like not the UN or the League of Nations, have you ever heard of the Interparliamentary Union or Interparliamentary Council? It's from the 1870s. And it basically runs all of the governments of the world, and it's the biggest, most powerful group that no one's ever heard of. Look it up. All right, it's Interparliamentary Union or Interparliamentary Council. And the American Congress and Senate and President says we're not a member on it, but when they have their meetings, they have them in the meeting in absentia anyway. In other words, you have no choice. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. So basically, all of the world is owned by this old nobility, and they have administrators, right? Because remember, the thing is not to upset the apple cart. So what they do is they look at like a part of the Middle East, and they say, okay, these guys right here, they like to live like this. So we'll let them live like that, and we're going to, through many years, and what we call policy, and our administrators, our governments, you know, they're all puppets in their government, the princes, kings, presidents, ministers, monarchs, whatever, we're going to have them do, you know, using psychological tricks that we know have worked for thousands of years on the people, like Hegelian dialectics and things like that, right? So, you know, they look at Russia. They do the same thing. Actually, the Soviet Union broke away from it during the Soviet times. And to prove that, the Stalin and Lenin took the Soviet Union off of the Pope's work schedule. Are you familiar with that? You can still find even the wind-up toy they changed. They're actually, you could find them on eBay. They had 10-hour clocks and, you know, 10-day weeks. You know, they got off the Pope's work schedule. Mm-hmm. By the way, anybody on the Pope's work schedule is part of this this empire, the world empire. Mm-hmm. So anyway, make a long story short here. You're being owned. That's why in any country you don't have money. Now, if you're a slave on a plantation, do you need money? Or is the plantation owner supposed to provide stuff for you, right? Now, on the other hand, if you have a plantation big enough, let's say over 10,000 people, it's possible they could have their little subgroup and have their little pieces of paper that they use as money amongst themselves, right?
Right.
It's exactly what's going on.
Of course.
So, but the thing is, you can't let the people know that they're in this condition of being owned. That's why if you look at any deed anywhere in the world that you own property, it says you hold it in joint tenancy. What's a tenant?
You're a tenant. You know, right. I was specifically discussing this with somebody off air just last night. Exactly
it
this point.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's true.
Right.
No.
So the whole world, you know, who is it? This is a prison planet. That's right. It is. Like, for example, if you wanted to make a logo of the Earth, take a vision of the Earth, visible, you know, image of it, and put a chain around it. And that's the logo of the Earth. Like, for example, when you look at the United Nations logo, you could bring it up yourself. Most people look at that and they're so brainwashed, they say, oh, yeah, that's just the Earth with the lines of latitude on it going around the – right? And then there's olive branches around. No, not at all. If you look at olive branches, olive leaves don't look like that at all. Those are shafts of wheat, 100% image of what wheat looks like. What is wheat? Symbolizes food. And the world is not in the lines of latitude and longitude. Those are not lines of latitude or longitude. Those lines in the UN logo are the lines that you see inside of a sniper scope. It's right in front of you. This is not like something I'm – you know, this is not like Jordan Maxwell who, you know, crap. This is stuff that anyone can see. You know what I mean? So what they're doing is they're weaponizing food to control you at this point. Anyway, why did we even bring that up? It sounds conspiratorial, which it's really not. It's really a syndicate. But basically, you're being owned. There's nowhere to go right now where whatever, right? But the problem is the masses that are ignorant are so big, they could roll over and crush you. Like if you know anyone who's a rancher with like very large cattle, well, they say what happens to the cattle, they feed them, they could slaughter them, bring them to market or whatever. But if things get out of control, those cattle can stampede and crush the rancher and his family and kill them off, right? Very easily. Mm. You see what's going on?
Well,
so you have the masses, literally, you know, if you even from a scientific point of view, you said he got rolled over by something that had great mass to it. Do you expect them, you know, no, it doesn't sound too good, right? So it doesn't, these people that rule the planet, that put administrators in front that you see. Now, it's very easy to prove this is true, by what they're saying and what they're not saying. Like, for example, you have blatant acts of heinous acts, like, well, as you might know, the JFK assassination. If the U.S. really had true enemies, how come those other countries' intelligence agencies didn't come out and expose the plot? Wouldn't that be more effective than dropping bombs on all the city, because it would completely discredit the government with almost zero survivability? How many countries have come out and said how 9/11 has been done? Or the fake moon landings, right? I'm not saying they didn't go to the moon, but I'm saying definitely what they showed on TV was a fake. Now, here's the other aspect. Discrediting a government to the point where it's in complete humility renders it into a zero survivability mode, where if you were to drop bombs on the country, that doesn't render zero survivability mode, because they could go on underground and displace themselves somewhat, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So how come there are no enemies? Because you're already all unified. We said joint tenancy. Imagine an apartment building where all these tenants hate each other. Ultimately, you can't go blow up the next guy's apartment, because you're living in the same building, you see? You're going to be doing harm to yourself. So you'll see how Putin covers for Trump and Trump covers for Putin and Hitler covered for whatever and this guy covered. They all cover for each other because they're all, you see? See, like World War I was fought over money, and World War II was fought over fake money. And World War II, there were no winners or losers. They just stopped fighting. People don't know this, but you could look up the history, right? So don't forget about what's in the papers, because if you read what's in the papers, you're going to think, you know, you're going to put the whole story together. And, you know, I don't know, was Kennedy shot from the book depository window by 19 Arabs with box cutters? Or, you know, which one was it, you know? I mean, they could morph the story into that and people will believe it, right? So you can't look at the newspapers. Like, for example, look at what they call the stock market crash. What's the popular story? That people were so upset they lost their money that they jumped out the window on Wall Street, right? No.
Which stock market crash?
Well, the big one in 20 – let's say the one in 29. The biggest one was in the 1800s, by the way, and there was subsequent ones every 10 to 17 years.
Right.
But what they tell people is that's not true. Anyone could do a little bit of research. New York Times still has articles where the National Guard had to be brought in because people who had their money invested with stockbrokers were going into the offices and throwing the stockbrokers out of the window.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Yeah, that's a slightly different action than somebody deciding to take their own life because, that's
paper money.
That's retribution versus depression. There's a bit of a difference there. Yeah, I know.
If you read the ancient writs, whether they're romantic, scriptural, you know, deific or whatever, man is always shown as being A, a prisoner, B, a slave, or 3, a hostage that needs to be freed, released, or ransomed.
Notice that? It is possible to simultaneously be all three. But
it depends. It's like when someone wants to beat you up and they got you tied up and you got to pick what you want to be beaten with, you know, a whip, a wrench, or a stick, right? Pick one, right? If you really want you pick the worst one, the one that's going to do the most damage to make the guy look bad, but it doesn't matter in the end because you're the one that's going to get hit. So the point is right now, humanity, you know, if you jump around, and because, you know, when you talk about, like, where do people come from and all that, even the evolutionism and the science is a religion. It has its own God, albeit secret, not too much, because you can see it, you know, if you look into their language. But do you ever consider that we were created by gods? And they say, you know, in almost every case, they're anthropomorphic. But did you ever stop and consider that maybe we are their form of art? Just like you have an artist draw a portrait with a landscape, you know, or make a sculpture, that when the gods are dealing with us, they're dealing with us as if we're artwork.
Well, and what does an artist do but reshape something that already exists into something that's a little more aesthetically pleasing, which seems to me to be the story that's told in various scriptures.
Well, you could call it an account, right?
Many
because
accounts.
It doesn't
fine.
Change.
That's fine. It doesn't change, by the way. I mean, that particular very narrow aspect seems to be universally, from Babylon to what you call the Bible, pretty much, it's there.
The point I'm trying to make is if everything is not the way it's supposed to be or should be, according to even the gods, there's no explanation for it being this way other than we are nothing more than an art form. Mm. Nothing different, really, than if you went to a carnival and you walked into the haunted house this time. But, you know, but you just stayed in the haunted house or the house, you know, the fun, whatever, right? So the point here is this. You got to be patient. The only problem is patience doesn't matter because you're probably going to die before you run out of patience because your life is too short.
Well, the other thing is, obviously, you know, look, you could look at filmmaking as an art form, and the people that say that this entire planet is pretty much a live-action reality show might not be too far off the mark because, hey, listen, if you were trying to make a TV show to entertain yourself, Planet Earth could be fascinating enough for somebody who can keep a camera in every single place on the planet. Why not? You know,
yeah, but, you know,
conceptually.
But film is a good thing because, you know, you got that's a good analogy. I always use the we're in the credits part, right?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, in other words, time ended. So you're in the credits part, and the credits unique because you show everything, especially you give actually credit, you know, you an accounting of everything and everyone that was part of making the film. And you also get to see certain aspects that weren't shown in the film. And it's all done in a very short, compressed time. And, you know, the other part that I never discuss about credits is that's the part of the film where no one tells you to sit down and shut up when they're running.
Mm.
Right? That's why how many times – like let's say all the people coming out right now, let's say on the internet saying the Catholic Church is nothing but a bunch of pedophiles. You know, you couldn't do that 30 years ago.
Well,
as a matter of fact, today, even today in Europe – if you're on a public radio, like terrestrial-based radio TV, and you say something against the Catholic Church, it's a $5,000 fine. I don't know if you know that. You know, Italy, Spain, you know, these big Catholic countries. Actually, Spain is even more Catholic than Italy. But anyway.
I do happen to personally know that's true in Italy. But go ahead.
Yeah. You know, so the thing here is what's interesting is that you got to be patient. You know, look. What's the best you can do with what you've got? Is really what anyone can say, right?
Mm.
You know, forget about, like, I don't have enough. Yes, you do, because if you're, you know, anyone that you speak to that's not point blank, the first thing they say to you is, do you have any money or anything to eat? If you meet anyone and that's not the first thing they tell you, they have enough to make do, right? Because it's easy to run into people, especially in the city, can I have some money, can I have something to eat? It's the first thing they tell you. Well, that person doesn't have a lot to do, you know, much to do anything with. They're on the most subsistent base. But most people, you know, whatever, if you got food, clothing, and shelter on a consistent basis, can you make the best of that? Right?
Generally speaking, I mean, the best of it, but now as to what the best of the situation is in comparison to what it could be quality-wise are two different things, but you can make best of that situation, sure.
Right, and also you could seek out quality and demand it. Now, the problem is that most people still think that they have what's called a profession, career, or general interest of things they do, a job or a job. You know, the difference between a job and a job, right? Anyway, okay. There's no application when you get a job.
Okay.
But anyway, okay, so either way, so when these people that have specialized professions or a narrow type of, you know, living in terms of their interest, when they want to learn something about medicine, they go to the medical society and try to look something up, or it might be brought into their house obtrusively when they're watching TV or, you know, whatever, the newspaper. When they want to learn something about the scientific world, they go to the scientific community. When they want to learn something about law, they go to the legal community. Okay, all those groups that I just mentioned are complete frauds, right? So what chance does this – and the people don't know this. And most of them will murmur under their breath, yeah, we know, but then what are you going to do? This is what everybody accepts. No, that's not what I'm talking about. Like when I say people are morons and stupid, a lot of people say, well, yeah, it's because, you know, they've been misled. This says they go the whole litany. I'm like, no. I'm just taking a cross section of where it is right now. And that's a fact. How they got there is not important. The fact is they are, right? It's like if someone comes in with a really bad bruise, it doesn't matter if you fell off a roof or fell off a bicycle or down the stairs, you got to treat the bruise, right? So what I'm saying right now, it doesn't matter that they've been propagandized or they're slaves and they're being owned by a nobility that no one knows who they are, let's say. Whatever the matter is, take a cross-section, right? They're stupid. Okay, what are you going to do to fix it right this second, the next 5 minutes, the next hour, the next day, the next week? That's what I like to speak on. That's why I always say no one is noticing even, you know, they want to talk about these far-fetched subjects or even if it's something something distantly far away, why don't you start mastering what's 5 feet around you first, and then 20 feet around you, right? Or whatever. You know, like people say, well, I'm in a relationship, I'm not happy. What makes you think if you get someone else you're going to be happy? Because you're just projecting on them, right? So, the whole thing is that is the essence of the point, right? I mean, what do the Marines say? Hoorah, right? Everybody thinks that's something that they do. What is it? You know what that means, right? Heard, understood, received, acknowledged. Right. It's an acronym, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that point, you know, when I go out and I speak, it's a hoorah thing. Did you hear it? Did you understand it? Did you receive it? Did you acknowledge? Like, let's go down the line. Let's go back with the legal thing. Like, you see a lot of that legal stuff in the news. I don't even know if it's still in the news with the FBI and Mueller and the Department of Justice. None of those people in the Supreme Court, FBI, Department of Justice know any law at all. At all. Right? People think it has something to do with law. They're attorneys. I think we've gone over this before. If you're an attorney and you study the law and try to apply it, you'll be a used car salesman in a week. Mm-hmm. That's not allowed.
Right?
Anybody could do research and read all the laws that they have and all the acts. That looks pretty scary, and it sounds like it applies to you. But go look at the definition of the terms and then tell me in the definition section of the law, does it apply to you? And the answer is a big fat what? N-O.
No.
It doesn't apply to you. Only very rare cases, right? You want to go to the medical community. Come on. Blood pressure? Viruses? Come on. Are you joking? Right? So, you know, I've spoken to many people. I've walked into rooms with doctors, senior medical people, and I started to give me a chance to speak, and they either leave, they get a blank stare and they leave, and I say, why'd you leave? So I can't acknowledge what you're saying. They're not challenging or saying what I'm saying is wrong. They just say, I can't acknowledge it. Right? The other ones, they get sarcastic, and they're like, oh, I didn't know I was going to learn that much today. Ha, 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 ha. Or the other ones will say, well, where did you get your degree? I can't listen to you unless you tell me where you got your degree.
Mm.
Right? Okay. So, like, for example, recently I had a discussion with someone who was a senior medical person, and they gave me a very sarcastic thing. I said, you know, it's about doing research on diabetes. And I said, well, okay, it's called diabetes, but really, you know, what's going on is, you know, as people with what they call diabetes are very low on potassium in their bodies. Yeah, that's right. I was like, well, you know, potassium is produced in the body by sodium intake, you know, and exertion, like in a warm, you know, in a warm environment, exercising, right? Like a construction worker working in the summer that takes salt, good high quality salt, their body will develop the potassium, and they're not diabetic, right? You see? So people who are diabetic are not being active in a warm environment with high quality salt. You get this iodized salt, which is poison, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I challenge anyone out there, if you've been measured as being diabetic or whatever. And by the way, that production of potassium, you know, when you take potassium, it just piss it right out. Your body will produce some of it, but it needs to be produced by the body, right? And if you don't understand this, you could look up a man named Kervran, K-E-R-V-R-A-N, who showed how the body produces these elements. But anyway, anyone who does feel like they've been diagnosed with diabetes or has it, not to the point where your limbs are rotting off, then it's too late. Then it's like the car has to go to the junkyard. But if you have a high-quality salt intake, like sea salt, you could put it a little pinch in some water, in warm water, but you're going to have to be very active in a warm environment. You will notice that condition will go away in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 3 months maybe, right? So what does that have to do with blood sugar? Can you tell me? Did I mention blood sugar at one moment?
It doesn't sound like I heard blood sugar or sugar in that equation.
No, they tell you when it gets cold, you get a virus or a thing. Well, wait a second. Doesn't that render – shouldn't you be getting sick in the summer because that's when those pathogens are more active? Is the logic because it's cold out you're going to receive a contagion of a microbiological thing? Isn't that unintuitive when you compare that to the notion that it should render all refrigeration useless? Hey, let's put our food out in the heat because there's no bacteria. We don't need refrigerators anymore.
Yeah. No.
No one's confused. Why don't you put the two together? Okay, and if you look up virology, it's under the toxicology, and the mitochondria that they're calling viruses are produced in the liver. So when they take a blood test and say you have viruses in your blood, those viruses came out of your own liver. So how is somebody going to catch a virus from somebody else?
Well, I guess through direct blood exchange, maybe.
No, but well, then it's yeah, then it's maybe yeah, right. But that's a different condition altogether. Again, well, I mean, not too many people go around just sharing blood. They might share dirty needles and whatever, but then they don't get it from sitting on it. Anyway, I'm
well,
saying
there's
this
also
is
sex
so
too. I mean, you know, sex is another.
But still, but that's different. So anyway, you know, here's the thing. There is advanced medicine. You know, here I'll give you. You know how to grow a limb back? This is stuff you guys are never going to get. It's a simple technology, although be it elaborate, because you can't use the type of stuff, you know, technology, electricity, and equipment that you have. But if you understand, you know, like, let's say, for example, you know what Kirlian photography is? You know, they take a picture and it shows, like, the aura around your body. It's usually blue or rainbow colored, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you put your hand on one of these plates and move your hand off it and you process that plate, it shows, like, the image of your hand with this light coming out of your fingers and can you imagine that curly in photography, right? Okay, so
yeah,
when
I've seen it actually done with trees where you can cut a limb off a tree, you use the photography to take a picture of that tree, and the limb is still
in
the picture.
That's right. So when people lose a limb, you ever heard of like phantom, you know, the guy lost his leg in the war and it's still itchy. He
phantom
goes to scratch
pain, phantom discomfort, sure, all the
right.
time. Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you put the person if they still have that image, which they usually will up to 18 years later, if they're it happens at a young age, you put their body on one of these things that exposes the field, and then where the field is, you just fill it in with material. I'm not talking about filling it in with wood and plaster. I'm talking about biological material from the person's own body, and you grow the limb back. This is being done with teeth and things like that. But anyway, why get into this? Like, for example, people talk about free energy machines. What are you talking about? Joseph Newman already has a motor that if you make it big enough and run it fast enough, it will put out up to 8 times more energy than you put into it. There's no mystery there.
Mm.
Right? There's no mystery that you have to eat seasonally. There's no mystery that the health of a society is based on the separation of its wastewater and its drinking water. There's no mystery in that.
Mm.
Right? It's all water-based. There's no mystery that if you look at what they call your legal society, there's no mystery that it's based on attorneys and it's based on a goddess religion and it has no basis in right or wrong or law. It's basically livestock control, right?
Mm.
Now, if you want – you notice I didn't bring up the religious because I think we've hammered those idiots long enough. All of the religions are satanic, the mainstream religions. What you call Satanism is not Satanism at all. That Satanism is a revival of ancient gods, albeit they're very hostile and very nasty, right? But what you call Satan or the adversary is the one that controls all of your mainstream religions,
mm-hmm.
right? That's why, for example, when you look at a Catholic exorcism, right, of a demon, when the exorcist goes in, is he being defensive or offensive? Offensive. Right? An exorcism is an offensive act.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so it's a fight. It's not because, you know. So anyway, and all of the memes and the cultures and all the stuff that have been in front of you, that JSUS hanging on a cross wearing a diaper, or the guy with the blue skin, or the other guy, you know, that didn't know how to read and write, yet whatever. You know, I mean, you got all these really, none of that stuff is based on any of the stuff that you find memorialized in the texts or history. None of it. So where does it come from? It comes from the ability to manipulate your imagination in large groups with a leader.
Mm.
Voila. So, in essence, it's very, 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 very simple. Be patient. The only thing is your life will run out before your patience does. Let's say we were having this conversation 100 years ago or 200 years ago. You're still only going to live, most people, 70, 80 years, 100 years or whatever. You're not going to see the end of this society. So even though you were patient to the last, your last breath, your life cut your, you see, interfered with your patience, didn't it?
Mm.
But if you had an unlimited lifespan and you decide to just be patient, you will see the end of this society quite readily. So fortunately or unfortunately, your life will end before your patience runs out. If you have that much time, you see? So that's basically the reality. That's real talk. It's the, you know, there's no reason to get into anything specifically other than things that people can apply to themselves immediately. You know, a lot of people are walking around with a big question mark. You ever see the thought bubble in cartoons?
Yeah.
I see those well, forget about light bulb because there's no light bulb in their head. There's no light. It's just question marks, right? Which is basically a dog's tail, right? So you look at that and
or
you
monkey.
Say, well,
monkey tails do that too.
Yeah, most likely the monkey, but you know, I don't like comparing humans to the monkeys because what the hell did the monkeys do to deserve such an insult?
Fair enough. Anyway.
So, what I would say is start mastering what's around you first, like the Karate Kid, wax on, wax off, right? You know this thing that you're on, this Pope's work schedule thing, yeah, it's okay. You could rid it, you put it in its proper place. It's a work schedule, right? It doesn't mean you have to ignore it. You obviously, we showed up because of it, right? You messaged me a Friday. You didn't, right? You told me. I said, I knew what you're talking about. So nomenclature,
right?
Start realizing the thing. You know, they tell you, flu, it's getting cold outside. You're going to get sick. Why am I getting sick? You got to wash your hands because of the bacteria. Really? When it's cold out? Okay. So these are some special bugs that get, right, okay. So anyway, you see my point here? It goes on and on and on and on and on. Why don't you start looking at it's immediately around you and making that better, right? But the thing is, most people, I've seen a lot of, over the years, like I remember going to the library and seeing stuff before that was out before Jordan Maxwell talked about the stuff that he did, right? Or the stuff that, who's the other guy, William Cooper, you know, there's someone recently sent me a video of a guy on Johnny Carson, 1964, who was talking about stuff that would blow people away today in the alternative media, right? Mm-hmm. So all this stuff has been around. But the thing is, it sounds like they cover such a broad idea, and what can I use? What is this person saying that I could use right now? And the answer is nothing. It just sounds good. It might make good conversation, but you're still scratching your head. And you're wondering why you feel so shitty. Not because you are shitty, but you feel shitty.
Hmm.
Right?
Well, you know, that's why I always try to say, okay, what is it that we can do with this information? Usually at the end of a show, I say, you know, what can we do?
Very simple. Well, the thing is, I've reached my saturation point. I've been speaking long enough. I think eventually warning people about what's coming is really the main thing. They're too censored. You know, there's a few people that get it. I mean, for example, I get a lot of people, maybe a handful of people, and also people in the medical industry, for example, that they bring case studies to me on Skype. And we're talking about people with 30 years in surgery, right?
Right.
And I say, why don't you do this because the body's in a vacuum, this A, B, C, or D, and they come back and say it worked. Very simple. Like if you just accept that the body's under a slight biological vacuum, when you have a cut or a wound, whether it's your body or a car tire or a bicycle tire, you're not going anywhere because you need that pressure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when you get a cut or a wound, you look at it as a leak in a bicycle tire. You wrap that really tight. You want to put a patch on it, not like a Band-Aid, but a very tight patch that stops any. Usually, if it's on a limb or something, you're going to have to release it every 10 minutes because your finger turns blue or whatever, right? Or numb. And any cut you hit, no matter how serious it is, unless your flesh is turning into jello, you're going to have extremely rapid healing, even burns. I've had searing burns on the fingers 2 weeks ago, and I did that, and 2 days later, it didn't even look like anything. 3 days later, it was no sign of it at all. If it was anybody else with the creams and the stupid whatever, you know, concept they have of it, I'd have scars on my hands, right? Okay, yeah. So in that case, if you understand the body's under a biological vacuum, you can work with it, right? If you understand, just wrap it tight. Very simple. But that sounds oversimplified, but, you know, there's more to it, you know, with disease and all this other things. How about the treatment of water? You don't need this fancy water stuff. You got these idiots going talking about water for 3 hours. None of them on the internet. There's hundreds of guys got miracle water and all this, and he shows up with a plastic bottle and he holds it up in the light at room temperature. You got to laugh at that, you know? I don't care if you're getting your water from a ditch. Keep it in the dark. Keep it as cold as you can and watch what happens. You do that right away, right? If you're religious in anything, start reading the book that they say. Now, what you may not like it. That's all right. But what they say, catch them on their hypocrisy, right? And then watch what kind of assholes you're dealing with, because every time you bring up a contradicting point to what they're doing, they say, that's your interpretation. Get out of here, right? Same with attorneys. How come in the definitions over here it says you're an attorney, you can only represent government officials or corporations or trusts? What am I doing in your justice corps? What are you doing here? I got nothing to do with you. Sure, where's the – you see, there's so many ways you could do – right? Mm. How am I supposed to pay taxes when there's no money, jerk off?
Mm.
Right? But if you're endorsing it, yeah, if you owe money to the heroin dealer, you're not going to get out of it.
Mm.
You know why? Because he also owns the police. Right? You can't go to the police for it. Right? So anyway, and by the way, you know what police are, right? When the banking districts, this fake money was established, they put police in. Because the sheriff is the lawful. Sheriff can also deliver commercial paper, but sheriff was part of the English franchise. The police were put in. Wherever you see police, that means that that area belongs to the banks. When the banks have enough mortgages, I think up to 30%, they create a police district. Because they own 30% of the town. They got to protect their investment.
Well, they have to put out policy enforcers, which, you know, sounds vaguely like police.
They're not law enforcement. They call them LEOs, which stands for law enforcement. They don't know any law. They think they do. Nobody. The attorney. You could go right now to the head attorney general is. He doesn't know any law at all. Go sit down with the Supreme Court people. They don't know any law. They're going to recite policy and history. They don't know law.
That's what I just said. They're policy enforcers.
But who's policy for their owners? Now, people, I've been in, like, for example, you say, how do they get away with it? Very, very simple. Very, very easy. You know, I mean, how do they get away with anything? Look, Manhattan, they blew up 150 kiloton nukes underground. Yeah, not above ground, but underground. And they got away with it. Right. I mean, they shot Kennedy out of the book depository window. Right. They had a clean line of shot with a magic bullet. Right. So, I mean, come on. They got away with that, too. Right. So anyway, and when they show you pictures from Man on the Moon, they show the moon this little tiny blue ball. Do you know? You know the moon is like what? Less than a quarter the size of the Earth, right? Mm. So if you're standing on the Earth looking at the moon, it looks this size. Now if you're standing on the moon, look at the Earth, it should look 4 or 5 times bigger, right? It's the same thing.
Whoa.
Like if you're standing on a motorcycle looking at a school bus, you expect it to look. You know, if you're on a school bus looking at a motorcycle 10 feet away, it looks small. Now you get on the motorcycle, look on the school bus, all of a sudden the school bus shrunk to the size of the motorcycle. Does that make sense? No.
Anyway, this is a known fact. Depends on how far away you are, though.
The same distance.
No, if it's the same distance, I get your point. But what I'm saying is that, you know, you could see the Earth as about the size of a marble, depending on how far away you are.
Right, but so what happened was when they went to the moon, they pushed the moon out another a million miles, from a quarter of a million to a million, to make the Earth seem that small. It's so ridiculous, it doesn't make any sense. It's right in front of you. And the astronaut suits weren't even pressurized. So anyway, you don't need pressure. But anyway, the point is, the reason I brought up the moon thing, somebody sent me some emails on moon conspiracy stuff for 2 hours. I don't need to watch that. This is your thing right here. Nobody, look at the picture of the Earth. It's got to fill, at least when you're looking at the horizon of the moon, it's got to be 1/10 of the entire horizon, which is pretty big. And no one's picking up. It's like, what the hell are you people on? I'll tell you what they're on. The moon conspiracy people, the JFK people, the debt money people, the history people, they all part of a group. Somebody put out some information. I like what he's saying. Let's, you know, this guy's saying, you like it? No, you don't? Okay, get out of here. You like it? All right, come on. You like it? Come on. It's like everybody's going to the bar. No one's paying any attention because they're all drunk.
Yeah, but see, math seems to work. Let me ask you this question based on what you said, and then I want to add in a listener question. Because when we look at the sun in the sky, this thing does not appear to be very large. It's kind of a tiny thing in the sky.
How far is the sun from the Earth, and how far is the moon from the Earth? According to their math,
well, that's
about
what I'm saying.
Eight million for the sun, roughly, and it's roughly a quarter of a million or less for the moon.
Right, but the sun is what, 300 times the size of the Earth?
No. If you do a comparison of the size of the sun and the size of the Earth right now on paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to see why this and the distance, why the sun looks like it is from Earth. Do the math. Just make a triangle. It's a cone, right?
No, I understand. I'm actually asking about the math here, because that's what I'm saying, is that based on the fact that the moon is so much smaller but is still closer, does the math work or not? That's my question.
Forget about the math. Mother Nature doesn't have a – she's not a crack whore with a calculator, as Ken Wheeler says. This is a simple – simple measuring, you know, like, for example, in high-end geometry, you do what's called geometric construction. You use a stick and a compass to make all your geometric shapes. You don't measure the triangle with a ruler, right? You do a construction, right? You make an arc, you make a circle, you know, you generate geometric forms using what's called construction. If you imagine right now, if you will, a ball the size of a basketball, a little bit bigger, that's the Earth. And across the street, you're going to put a softball, right? You can imagine that in the distance, you know, maybe 30, 40 feet.
Sure.
When you're looking at the softball from the Earth's perspective, it looks like a softball. When you're on the softball looking at the from the moon to the Earth, is it going to look like a softball or is it going to look like a basketball? It'll look like a basketball, no matter how far away you go. Especially if – no, not no matter how far away you go. If you haven't changed the distance, the perspective is the same. If I take a camera and
I understand
the Earth,
that,
and I take a picture of the moon,
that
same camera, if the distance between the moon and the Earth hasn't changed, if I'm standing on the moon taking a picture of the Earth, it's a hell of a lot bigger. A lot bigger.
Well, of course it should be. But what I'm saying is,
but it's not in the photos.
If you make a basketball the size of a house, but then you back it up so many
miles
away.
We're not changing anything miles away. Everything's the same.
No. Okay. Let me try and explain what it is that I'm asking you in comparison.
I think we've gone off on a tangent that's not necessary.
No, I understand. I understand.
How about this? Everybody do your homework.
No, definitely. Definitely. I would like to see people do that because I'd love to see what the mathematical equations say regarding this because it's a fascinating thing.
It's use trigonometry to do it just like a surveyor we use. You use sine, cosine, trigonometric functions. If you look at surveyors with a theodolite.
Well, both of your eyes do trigonometric calculations at all times. That's what we call depth perception, okay? So
That's the only math you need, but you don't even need that math.
Well, I'm just saying that this is
a cow can do it.
But this is one of those things that you have to consider is that the size in the visual field that is being observed of something which is very large, you back it away, it becomes very small, even if it is a lot larger than you or anything you're standing on.
But the distance is a given. Distance is not variable. Here's the point. No one's picking up on that fraud. In other words, the point is, if they're on the moon photographing the Earth, it's got to look a lot bigger, at least five times bigger than they're showing it. No one's pointing that out. This is a basic geometric astronomical fact. You don't even have to use the planets. You could use any object. Now, if the moon all of a sudden, when they landed on the moon and took the photograph, the moon was all of a sudden 5 to 8 times further away, that picture is legitimate, but that didn't happen. Anyway, the point is, no one is paying attention to the simple stuff.
I was just trying to get a handle on the quantities involved here because I'm wondering if that's accurate, what you're saying in general. That's all. But, look.
If all things stay the same, the perception stays the same also.
No, I understand that. But
if you're standing on a big object looking at a small object and everything is the same, the distance between the objects and the objects themselves, when you're standing on the big object, the little object will look small. Now move your body over to the place where the little object is. When you look over to the big object is not going to look small like the small object. It's going to look big like the big object. It's like when you're on a cruise liner looking at someone in a rowboat. And they're tied together. They're not moving. You could see, you look down, you see there's a freaking big cruise liner, look at the little rowboat. Now you go in the rowboat and you look at the cruise liner, all of a sudden the cruise liner is as small as the rowboat? No, sorry, that doesn't work.
No, I understand what you're saying.
That's what they're showing you.
There's a variance here where when you see the moon as we apparently see it in the sky, you have different conditions than what you're looking at for the Earth. There is a different visual condition. I mean, listen, in enough darkness, you don't see the moon anyway. It doesn't matter. You wouldn't see the Empire State Building in a blackout. Okay, it is large. It is still there, but you're not able to necessarily perceive it. And there is more than one condition besides just the juxtaposition between the two objects. That's all I'm stating. So I'd like to see what this looks like when it's entirely studied, to see if that perspective is way off or if there is an explanation for it. That's all I'm at, that's all I was entering into there. And I think it's a fair question. But anyway, we'll put it aside. I do have a listener asking if you have any sort of thoughts about things like yoga and stuff like that. I also have some interesting questions which relate to religious aspects, I would call them, scriptural things. And a few other random bits that that people have either written in advance or entered into the chat room as we're speaking.
Sure. The scriptural part is difficult because 99% of the questions are hinged upon very bad versions, right? Okay. So if I'm asking you, for example, a question on the magic bullet, right, you don't want to address that because there was no magic bullet, right?
Well, no. See, I'll take what it is they're referencing and explain to them what it is from the real evidence as opposed to the...
Exactly. That's why scriptural questions are opening up a thing, because someone will ask me, what about this? I say, well, go back to an internal linear, see what it really says, and I'll consider it. The answer is right there, if you know what came before it, because scripture is cumulative. You can't go, like, for example, if you know mathematics, you got from kindergarten all the way up to PhD level math. When you go to PhD level math, you sit down and you think they're going to start already class what's 1 plus 1? No, it's cumulative, right? So, and also if you take kindergartners and put them in a PhD class, you could talk to them for an hour. Anybody got any questions? They all raise their hand, and you know what they ask? Yeah, you got any candy? So you know, the thing is, you're going to have to understand this is cumulative, but we'll give it a shot. In terms of yoga, okay, that's like what about Tai Chi Chuang, yoga? There's various other movements, you know, that exist. Every culture has some kind of a physical therapeutic or physical movement, just like in martial arts, right? You know, the Europeans have their own style, but it was squashed out. Like the Greeks had what's called Pankration, which is a Greek fighting like jiu-jitsu,
right?
So to make a long story short, any of these healing arts are fine. The only problem is that they've been dummied up or dummied down, right? Mm-hmm. So the basic principle has been removed. So, but the bottom line is you have to judge it from your lawful perspective. Are they telling you to do something that's unlawful, right? Mm. You know, if you got a yoga instructor that makes sure that everybody, male and female, in the class likes to do goddess pose and happy baby most of the time, that's not because he wants to it's because he's stretching out your vaginal and anal muscles because he wants to get into it. Anyway, make a long story short, you got to look at the character of the people that are giving you this information. Otherwise, you got to discern what's good for you. Take it, like we said about Daniel Estulin in the store, that's all rotten stuff. Take what works for you and go. All right? But that means you're going to have to do a little bit of homework on your own before you investigate it. But are they all these, let's say yoga, Tai Chi Chuan, are they corrupted? Oh, yeah. But the thing is, it doesn't mean you can't get a benefit out of it, right? So make a long story short on that, I would suggest that it's anything that's group-based, you're going to have to be leery of, do a little bit of research on your own, and try to find its history. So I hope that helped. You know,
no,
if there's a health benefit. But, you know, if they start talking about blood pressure and viruses causing diseases, you know where they're at. And then you might diminish their importance a little bit more, rightfully so, right? So.
No, absolutely, absolutely. But look, we're actually a little over the time where I usually take a break, so I'm going to do that. But the Greek is with me here on this particular Friar's Day, and I'll try to get to the rest of your questions or see what we can do with them anyway as we go forward here on the Ocelli Effect. We will be right back.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. The brilliant author of The War State brings you exclusive reports about the big changes upcoming in the markets. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
News, entertainment, and more. You will learn something, children's. Ocelli.com.
my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I'll be all power to the people.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media.
O'Shelley. The second hour beginning now at O'Shelley.com. Do appreciate you for tuning in, whether it is later on via your final slab of choice, your applicable application, etc., etc. Who knows? Maybe we'll be back in the Apple iTunes store shortly, but for now, glad to have you along, and if you're catching this on the live stream, also much appreciated. There is an interesting conversation going on in the chat room at O'Shelley.com, and I do want to thank all of you who participate in one way or another in this show. Tonight, we are talking to the Greek, and Transresistor Radio will be up next. That ought to be interesting as well tonight, but I got to produce that as soon as I'm done. And where did we leave off? Well, a lot of places, really.
Yoga. Yoga. None of these things that can help anyone are harmful if they're helpful. But the thing is, you know, what is there a compromise, and are you being led down, right? What are you being led down? Mm-hmm. You know, to give you an example, here's, you know, anyone could do rudimentary research on what they call the satanic cults. And when they abuse children or human sacrifice or whatever, the report you get is a gender switch. The men wear women's clothing and the women wear men's clothing. Now, how many times have you heard these people are behind the scenes running the world, right? It's not a joke, and it's not a mild suggestion. It's, you know, it's pretty true that they belong to these types of cults. Why wouldn't they, in quote unquote end times, allow that kind of behavior to their people? You ever heard of LGBTQXY, whatever? Mm-hmm. It's all right now for men to dress like women and women to dress like men, and they have rights. So what do you think that comes from? The same, these little occult groups that do, you know, you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. There are all of the stuff that you see that people are fighting over or may want to take lying down or see it as a demise of their society is nothing new. It's just stuff that's behind the scenes that's now being put on the public because, hey, why can't we all be friends, right?
Well, yeah.
The thing is, you know, in other words, anyone who's researched what quote-unquote human sacrifice with these Western satanic cults will see LGBT whatever as being an extension of that in the public. It doesn't matter if the public knows it or not, right? Mm-hmm. Just like how many people in the public use a celebratory birthday cake? How many of them know what that represents or even cares, right? How many, right? We've talked about what do cannibals, birthdays, and dolls have in common.
Oh, I think that was our very first discussion, actually. Public discussion, anyway, was definitely that, yeah.
No, it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter that you're going to say anything or promote the real meaning of what it is and get people to stop. No, because it's not in your position to do it. You're going to get rolled over very easily, right? What you do, though, what's happening, because of the spiritual side that controls this, when you tell people, it doesn't matter if they like it or agree with it or not. What's important is you say to them, did you hear what I said? Did you acknowledge what I said? Not whether you acknowledge it morally or whatever, but did you hear? And once the minute they say yes, now they are guilty of it. Do you get my point?
Right.
The warning shot. You know, what's the purpose of a warning shot? To be heard or not be heard? To be heard. And if you continue and you get shot, and then there's an entire let's say inquiry done in the thing, they're going to say, but he did fire a warning shot.
Well, I'm probably going to get something from you, but I do believe this is very legitimate, this aspect of what we call law anyway, this concept of mens rea, where you have to be aware that you were committing a criminal act at some point in order to be culpable for said criminal act.
That's right.
This is a spiritual concept, actually, and a lawful concept.
It goes throughout the entire universe.
Right, right.
Now, here's the thing, you know, like, you know, the biblical text, Leviticus, is where you find most of the law, and there's a big chunk of it and why it's the law. And the first chapter goes something like this. I'll paraphrase. When you know the law and you see, you know, so your fellow man transgressing it, but he doesn't know the law, you can't hold him guilty of it. But once you tell him the law, now he can, now the guilt is on him. But here's the thing. There's a certain point of culpability if you want to live in harmony with him, if he, even though he doesn't know the law, this is an extra part that I'm adding. Just because he doesn't know the law doesn't mean that there's going to be hell to pay. Or some, you know, you might have, you know, if you have enough people like that that don't know the law and that you can't hold them responsible, but you know what's going to happen? Your crops are going to start failing. You might have an invasion. You might have really bad weather. You might get pestilence. This is when the gods are, you know. But anyway, so what I see part of Greek speak is doing is just making it easier for the other side, because anybody who hears me is guilty. Mm. Doesn't matter if they like it or not, or forget it or not. At one point, it's been checked off that these assholes heard it, and it doesn't matter if they do anything or not. You see? It's like, for example, if the quote-unquote alien invasion or the gods came to Earth right now to clean up this society. I call it the mop-up crew, right? I don't use terms like the apocalypse or Armageddon. I use the mop-up crew, right? Because I'm not giving a description. I'm giving an explanation, right? Mm. You can describe it as whatever colloquial term, apocalypse, Armageddon, whatever, but that's not the explanation. They're coming to muck to clean it up, right? I tell people, look, you know, how do you feel about that? I'm like, fine, look, if I knew they were coming right now, I'd say, look, hold up, fellas, come over. I'm going to make some sandwiches and coffee so you got all your energy to do the jobs that you need to do. Mm. You know what I mean? Because it has to be done. And here's the interesting part. I've said it on various Sonic events. You know what the number one agenda is of the controllers of the world right now? How they're going to reduce the Earth's population to like a tenth of what it is, right? For the United States, you could look this up. There are plenty of war documents you could look up online. By 2030, they want the United States to be only 20% of the population that it is now, mm-hmm. without even factoring any growth, you know. So they want to reduce it down to like 20 million people or something, right, or whatever. So the only problem with getting that agenda done is you want the remaining, the ones that remain, to go along with you. Right now, if you just come out and kill 8 out of 10 people in the U.S., I don't think the remaining 2 out of 10 are going to want to cooperate. You have to get them psychologically primed and ready. You see what I mean? Mm. It's like the vaccine thing is a good one. You know, the vaccine's like the lottery. They put out a million vaccines, and there's like 30 or 40 really severely tainted ones in the batch. They're either controlled or not controlled. Because when you get a vaccine, you got to sign paperwork. They're easy to track. So if everyone takes the million vaccines and you get 70 or 80 people end up in the ICU the next day, you know, they know where they got the vaccine and all that. They got the numbers and all that. And they say, let's see what the public reaction is to these people dying from the vaccine. Mm. That's why it's called the CDC, not the CDP. It's the Center for Disease Control, not the Center for Disease Prevention. You notice that? Mm-hmm. It's a control mechanism. Which you see how the vaccine thing works? It's a psychological thing. There's no such thing as an immune system. That's your first prey. Anyway, it's so ridiculous. You know, Chuck, you notice I stopped being edifying. We used to do the Sonic events. I'd sit there and you'd ask me questions, or I'd supply and go on and give all the reasoning. I'm done with that. These people are too ignorant. They don't want to know. It's not because I know and I'm smarter. Maybe I'm a little less stupid. But the thing is, right now, those that know will see it. And those that don't know, that want to know, will hear it. And the rest, stugats. Bafangul. Mm. Right? So, I don't know. Can you do that on Google Translate? Anyway.
I'm sure they can.
You know. So,
go ahead.
So, anyway, this is so simple and so easy to see that it's just freaking ridiculous. That's how many times you hear me say, set yourself apart from it. Right?
Well, see, now, anyway. This brings up a question for me. I'm not going to get to the listener questions probably tonight, because there's a bunch of them, and I think you don't want to answer about the Queen of Heaven and a few other things.
Yeah, I could just shoot them by. I'll do them real quick. Queen of Heaven is a goddess. Look, these people can answer their own questions. Very simple. I think we've gone over the biblical meme is very, 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 very simple. You know, you got various creations of mankind. It's right there if it has any historicity, right? Mm. So I think you remember, you know, it shows man being made on the sixth day, and they're made man and woman right off the gate, and they're set out. Their job is to populate the world. Then on the seventh day, the gods rest. And on the eighth day in the Garden of Eden, they don't create man. They form him out of soil they took from the earth. Mm-hmm. Right? This is 2,000 years later after the other guy. And they don't make – and when they make this man, they don't make man and woman. They make one guy. And is his job to go out and populate the earth? No. His job is to stay in the garden, mow the lawn, trim the brushes, take the garbage out, right? Maintain the – and all of a sudden he's by himself. He says, okay, we need to make a woman. So well, we're not going to make a woman like – you know, we're going to just take some flesh out of your body and grow a woman out of it. Very different. And then they have, let's say, a pair of twins, two sons, and one kills the other, and he isn't put to death for killing him because he didn't intend to kill him. He was just angry at him. He didn't know what it took to kill him, right? Mm. Because if he intended to kill his brother, he had to be put to death, right? Mm. But he didn't intend to kill him. So anyway, he gets sent out away from the garden to the land of Canaan, and he says, well, you know, if they find me, these people out here find me, they're going to want to kill me, right? Well, what people? What people? Well, the people that were made on the sixth day. You see what I'm saying? It's so simple, right? Mm. Now, a lot of people say, well, it's a rehash of the story of the sixth day when you go into the Garden of Eden. Really? I find that the whole book has historicity to it. If you're reading the first two pages of Genesis, that's before the next 5 or 10 pages, which is before the next 20 pages. This is all historically laid out in a timeline. So you believe what you want to believe, and I'm going to tell you what's in the text. All right? That's all. Because no one else is doing it. I'm not saying no one else, but, you know, since we got the opportunity, I can say that, right? Very simple. So you got the flood. These people are mixing now. You got the really original people, and things get really, really bad because the gods are, you know, openly interacting with man. So they destroy the whole thing, but location by location, not all at once. It's not like you ever see the Sherwin-Williams logo where they cover the earth with paint? Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
They show it to paint going over. That's not how it worked. But anyway, when you get to the point, they all gathered at one point. This is a few hundred years after the flood, and many survived from before. And they divide them up as nations, and they're supposed to go out and live as different nations with a different patron and matron deity. And each patron and matron deity over each nation in the world is supposed to judge and teach the people about the laws of the Creator. But they didn't want to do that. They wanted to stay in Babylon and build a temple. Well, that's what pagans do. Is what the pagans do is they have like an exchange system with their local god. Mm-hmm. They bring an offering to their god because they want something done. Well, that something could be anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the god can't resist the offering. He comes down just like the genie in the bottle, right? And you get three wishes kind of thing is one way. But that's not even a god. It's a djinn. It's a form, a very low form. So the people were trying to do that, and they're like, no, you know, you're supposed to go with these other gods. So, okay, we're going to just confuse you to the point where you can't come over here and make this giant offering temple, and you got to scatter. Now, when they did scatter and they did get a god over them, each nation got a god over them, those gods didn't do the right thing, right? It's like a mob that has the boss, and all the capos take a territory, but they're operating independent of the boss. How long does that last?
Usually
you're going to get whacked.
Usually the boss takes out those capos and replaces them with somebody that they can,
That's exactly what's going to – that's your history of the biblical text. That's why in the end everybody's going to be under the one they're supposed to be. And these particular gods are going to be killed just like men. You could read about it in Psalm 80. That's the whole story of Scripture. So now you got the Queen of Heaven. That Queen of Heaven is a very predominant figure in the Middle East. Now, what happened, of course, you understand that the Druids are really the remnants of the Babylonian priesthood. You know, everybody traveled all over the world, right? So they in the Catholic stuff and all that. So the Queen of Heaven is merely a goddess, right, over a certain people. And did she do the right thing? No. She's not Sophia. She's not wisdom.
But she was referenced in the text at some point, wasn't she?
Oh yeah, yeah. In Jeremiah, so why do you know? Jeremiah, you know, tells the people, look, you're gonna Nebuchadnezzar can pretty much kill everybody, so you know you're gonna have to straighten up. He's like, no, what are you talking about? You know, where'd you get that? He says, we got it from Yahweh. He says, well, Yahweh, what are you talking about? We've been worshiping the Queen of Heaven. Look how for hundreds of years, look how we've prospered. What are you talking about? Right. So, anyway. You see, your life will run out before your patience does. So make a long story even shorter. The whole point is this. It's you're caught in between. This is like, again, when the capos and the boss are having a war, don't you think some innocent bystanders are going to get in the way eventually? Mm. Right? whether they like it or not.
No, it's now, a guarantee. It's called collateral damage.
Right, and in this case, though, you're not so innocent with the birthday cakes and the Christmas and the churches and the LGBT and the Pope and the whatever federal crap you got going on. Well, you're not so innocent.
Listen, some of that allegedly non-combatant collateral damage in a typical conventional war sense are not innocent either, because in some cases they were supporting the enemy who is also being attacked in one way or another. So, I mean, kind of very sensible, actually, that there is some collateral damage. I mean, is there some unfortunate tragedies involved there, too, as well? Well, yeah, but...
Well, here's the thing. The gods are not protecting their own people because they're hostile to the people. Mm-hmm. Like the U.S. military, when you read military documents and they talk about enemies, domestic or foreign, the foreign part is the one outside of the border, usually known as an alien. But the ones that are domestic are the ones within the border. That's you who's not in the military. Mm-hmm. You. And until you go in the military, now you're not a domestic enemy. Anyway, that's if you understand the Libra Code and the Civil War, that was set up for that situation. Mm-hmm. Why do you think there's a military base unconstitutionally in every state? I'm not saying I'm against it. I'm just telling you what's going on. What do you need the Navy for in Utah? You know, I mean, come on. The reason they got federal military bases in each state is because if there's an uprising, well, look, what are you going to send the police? No. National Guard? And then what? So, you know, the thing is no one sees, and they're like, oh, thank you for serving. Who was that journalist? He had something out of fate. He was a Marine, retired, and when he used to tell people he was in the Marines, and they say, thank you for your services. He wants to punch him in the throat because the whole thing was a fraud. It was a waste of time and a fraud, right? You ever heard of this guy?
I've
quite a public figure.
I've heard of a few of them. If you're talking about a classic sort of example of a guy who was very dissolute, you're talking about Smedley Butler, or are you talking about...
No. He's a recent guy. He's still around. He makes years ago, he was doing the tour. Yeah, I think he has a website, and he does some alternative stuff. I ran into him quite a few years ago.
It's a radio station.
He's an ex-Marine, and he talks about a various subject, whatever is in the news like everybody else.
Right. They bring him on as one of these sort of talking head figures every now and then. They used to anyway. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. So the whole thing is, I mean, it's beyond reality. I mean, come on, look, I'm going to say two things that'll discredit Christianity. Ready? Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. Come on. You don't have to talk about anything else. Come on. Just walk away. You know, but look, the food is good. We have a good time. So look, the gods know that, and they keep you in that position.
Directly to another question, by the way, which is a direct one at you about this particular subject, where I'd like you to pick it up. This is exactly as it's written. You are on planet Earth. Are you not censored as well? And if so, why are you not more censored, so that you are in line with everybody else?
That question just answered itself right there. the reason censorship was brought up twice. What is censorship? Is it deliberate blocking or changing of information so the people, whoever it's presented to, doesn't see it? Mm-hmm. So how about how about you change it in reverse? Right? You know, what the cosmic censorship is like? If everything is upside down, if you turn anything upside down, guess what? Now it's right side up. Mm-hmm. Like Jack Fresco talks about the upside down world, right? In an old barn, when a knothole was knocked out and the light came across the herd of cows and you looked in the barn, the cattle were, everything is upside down. You know, the shadow box does that, right? Mm-hmm. Your eye, works that way in cameras. You know, you ever work with medium format film? When you develop the film, you look at it, all the pictures are upside down, because that's how cameras work, right?
Well, yeah, that's why you require two mirrors in order to...
Well, a periscope, we'll reverse it again. But, there's many ways to look at it. I mean, the cosmic censorship, I think we brought up the idea that if you want to hide something, you put it in the library, right? And also, even if they find it in the library, they're not going to look to define the language. Look, when you're going to learn another language, whether it's your own or a foreign language, you can read the words. Like if you read Latin script, Roman script, the ABC through Z, you could read pretty much most of the newspapers in the world, right? Doesn't mean you understand it, because why? You lack definition, mm-hmm. right? Right now, let's say you don't speak any Italian or any Spanish or Portuguese. You can read, Chuck, you could read the Portuguese newspaper. You can read it. But you lack the definition of the words, right? Mm-hmm. So why bother? You're just making sounds. So even if people find the information, they lack the definition mm-hmm. of the words. That's another key to look for the censorship. Look, the ancient writs talk about the censorship. There's various forms of censorship. Man has picked up on how to use it as well, using groups, you know, Gustave Le Bon. You put people in a group, everybody feels comfortable. Anything that contradicts the group ideology is no good. And they defend it or become offensive, right?
Right.
Now, in terms of the gods, the ones that are benevolent are going to put a censorship on you that's going to make the more you learn and the more you see, they don't want to make you totally miserable. So they're also going to show you the stuff that's beautiful that you can do while you're being patient. Mm. Right? I mean, what's more pleasurable than a delicious meal? Than a comfortable surrounding, than a really comfortable bed, and having someone that you love, and even physically interacting, physical love, erotic love, good clothes, good shoes, good food, right? Putting things in order, even if everything is out of order, putting them in order in your own mind, right?
Mm. Speaking of putting things in order in your own mind, another question which... By the way, you're intuitively seemingly answering a bunch of the questions, in my estimation, that I have here. But one that you didn't is, what is the starting point for telling time?
Same starting point for anything. You got what's called law. And I'm not talking about what you're told is law. You better learn what law is. Law is a set of rules that give explanations of your environment. Okay, now, first of all, there is no time, you know, but I'm not speaking of it in the New Age or point of view. There are only events. Certain people that are responsible socially and familially and nationally or whatever you want to say it, they want to record these events, right? You have history. We want to memorialize something, right? So you're going to have to do like what you said in the beginning, the when, why, where, who, and what, right? And all that. Mm-hmm. So the time is just the when, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, what's lawful timekeeping? Well, one thing, if someone tells you you got to do something and the only way you could do it is by doing business with him over here, which is Rico, by the way, is not lawful, right? Mm. So if you don't know what day it is because you don't have a calendar, or you don't know what time it is because you don't have a clock, a mechanical wind-up toy, that don't sound too lawful, does it? Mm. Right? So, lawful, basically, anyone can access equally. And also, do you ever hear of the concept of reinventing the wheel? Why? That's like saying, hey, why are you going through all this? It's been done already, and it's been done properly, right? So, historically, when does the day start? I'm not going to answer that. Go look it up. Historically, when does the month start? I'm not going to answer that again. That's a rhetorical question to those that are willing to learn.
Okay, fair enough.
Look,
you know,
I dare anybody go to an astrology. This is I'm not for time. You know, I'm not even asking you to trust me. Anybody could validate this in real time if you're quick with a keyboard. Go to any college, any university in the world, a community college or Ivy League. Put in astronomy curriculum, and I want you to look in their curriculum and find out astronomical timekeeping. And they're going to tell you astronomical timekeeping is also scientific timekeeping. It's very accurate. And they'll all say the day starts at solar noon and the month is what goes with the moon. Bada bing, bada bang, we're done. Right? Mm. In their own stuff.
I got you. One other thing here is, let's see. Is there a way to attract attention from or to seek the favor of benevolent entities?
Well, here's the thing. That fortunately, the benevolent entities are far more powerful and omniscient than the malevolent ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they already know it. But the thing is, what do you give someone who already has everything, right? If you were to bring an offering... Right, I've had this before. We were going to go to this billionaire's place, you know, house who's having an anniversary or a celebration, and you don't want to show up empty-handed. So, like, what do you buy a billionaire as a gift? What do you buy him? He's got everything already, right?
Well, you might seek to bring a unique object,
right.
A unique something.
Something, well, how, you know, but either way, you get my point. What do you give to someone who already has everything is what, well, attention.
Hmm.
Right?
Okay.
And you know what? If you study scriptures of any God, they tell you how they want that attention, or what flavor of attention, you know? And they tell you who they listen to and who they don't. Look, there was this thing on Netflix recently about some Nordic. It's like a comedy drama, you know, thing. It takes place 500 years ago with the Vikings, right?
Okay.
And in every time the scene changes, they're like, they got to sacrifice somebody to Woden. And the guy's like, how do I get out of it? And if I get out of it, you know, we still have to do something for Odin or Woden. You know, what are we going to do instead, you know?
Mm.
I mean, this is common. I mean, you know, so anyway, I think I'm the only one of the few people to come out on the what they call the stupid rectangle and in the beginning for years and years stress the point that it's all based on what? Human sacrifice, the malevolent.
Hmm.
Blood sacrifice. All of the gods require it, by the way, even the benevolent ones, but not from humans, because humans are unclean.
Hmm.
Anyway, you'll get over it. Yeah.
One also asks, how do individuals' labors fit into that equation when it comes to... I guess offerings to the gods, are not labors also offerings to different gods as well? I think that question is also something that answers itself. But
labor could be all the way from a woman in labor, right, which was defined as the ultimate sacrifice, by the way, because I think we've explained that the most precious part of the body is the genitalia, you know, for future generations, you know, no matter, let's say you had a society that was perfectly healthy with no genitalia, they'll all be gone in 40 years, right? Mm-hmm. So keeping the genitalia intact and functioning assures procreation, right?
Right, right.
So what's the fruit of the most important part of the body? The baby.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they did the baby sacrifices, in short. There's actually more reasons that you can get into, but in short, that's what all societies have in common. Even today, they still do it. That's why there's a million... was 8 million children every year missing, not to be recovered or investigated on the planet. Mm. It's probably more in the 15 million. You know the statistics are skewed, right?
Of course.
So anyway.
Well, no,
labors, I mean, that's too general of a question. How about living your life lawfully? Right?
Well, what does that accomplish? How about that? Because
actually, not that much. There's actually a proverbial, something that gives a little bit of wisdom, a little insight in the book of Ezekiel. You want me to go through it real quick? This will help the person with the labor.
Absolutely.
At a time during at the temple period, the elders had convinced a bunch of people to do sun worship at the temple. You know, you wake up in the morning. I had somebody invite me to do that once. I didn't go. I said that was so stupid. Whereas the sun's coming up, you stare right into it without blinking, and you get that light, and you bow down to the sun and all that shit, right? Every culture has some form of that. So if you read in there, Yahweh says to Ezekiel, I'm going to send an angel to put a mark. I don't like what's going on, and I'm going to put a mark on everybody who's protesting this action, right? And everybody else I'm going to kill. I'm going to send an angel down. And I'm going to kill all the other ones involved in this, right? So you ever know, if you listen carefully, even though I'm paraphrasing, there were people who were living lawful lives that knew about this but didn't say anything about it, right? Did they get the mark of protection? No. The ones that saw it were lawful and complained about it or protested about this happening. In other words, it's unlawful or not right according to the previous agreements we have. They're the ones that got the mark of protection. You see?
So, and the last thing I have loaded up here is related to Zacharias Sitchin.
Oh, boy.
So, I can only imagine what it is you're going to say about this, but...
There's two levels to everything anybody asks anyone who knows about Zacharias Sitchin, so go ahead.
Right, okay, so...
I'll give both of those levels quickly if I can.
No problem.
By the way, I have one of his books that are signed by him, And I heard, I was listening to Coast to Coast a while back when he died. I jumped up in the morning and I told the wife, I said, hey, you know that paperback they only want to give us $2 for? It's signed by Zachary Sitchin, and now it's probably worth a couple of hundred because the fucker's dead. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, probably. Probably gone up in value, but actually this question is about Zachariah Sitchin's work on Babylon and the interpretation of what seemed to precede what you generally refer to as the biblical text. Okay. So the stories are a bit different in Zachariah Sitchin's work regarding what Babylon allegedly preserved in its own language, which has not been translated properly or memorialized for public consumption. What do you think of his work in general?
All right, his work in general is for public consumption, which is what? A dummy load. Now, why is it a dummy load? Because 99% of the people that refer to the ancient Sumerian, Babylonian, Akkadian culture are not referring to their historicity of that culture, but referring to their works. Like a lot of people say, well, Gilgamesh is, you know, the flood story and the god story and all this other stuff, but they fail to tell the public who's unaware Gilgamesh was a commissioned play. It was a work, just like Shakespeare. 99% of the stuff that people have access to about that ancient culture were cultural works, like Macbeth, or things like that. They were not intended to be history, even in their times. They were commissioned plays and acts that were to be performed for the king's court. Big difference from being a historical record, right? Number one.
Let me enter this part into your explanation before you go into the second part. What would you say to contend that possibly the biblical text is simply one of these works as well that has survived
the same way? Well,
because it does share a commonality. I mean, listen, there's some commonalities with Gilgamesh and the story.
There has to be.
Yeah.
Just like Shakespeare's Julius Caesar has commonalities historically, not factual, some factual things.
Well, but it also has commonalities with the biblical text.
Well, the only thing about the biblical text is extremely accurate historically and geographically and archaeologically, where the other ones are not. Hmm. I mean, right now, so remember I said one of the signs of this period is acknowledgement of the works of the Creator, I should have covered a little bit when I gave the quick history of the Bible. Like, for example, right now, scientific journals have picked up that there was a very hot meteorite strike that turned pottery into glass in the Middle East, on the northeastern part of the Dead Sea. And if you understand, that's the true location of Sodom and Gomorrah, not where they tell you it is, all the way at the bottom of the Negev there, right? Mm-hmm. So they're actually scientific, whatever, is dating and acknowledging the destruction of Sodom right now in their own journals. Right? But it's not, you know, they won't say it's Sodom, but anybody who reads the biblical text, actually, by description, land description, it tells you you can see Sodom from the area of Bethel or Jerusalem, and it tells you where it was in the Kikar, meaning the flat plain that was at the end of the river, right? Where they tell you Sodom and Gomorrah is with those other idiots all the way at the bottom of the Dead Sea where they're finding sulfur and all that other stuff, that's not Sodom and Gomorrah at all. So what I'm saying is there's going to be acknowledgement. But here's the thing. The interesting thing about archaeologically identifying and proving out the biblical text's accuracy is a very slippery slope for the conventional wisdom or conventional, actually, tomfoolery and stupidity regarding religion and all that other, and evolution and all that other stuff, right? Mm. So, but this is not for me to be apologetic or defend. You'll see it, you know. And like I said earlier, I have no interest in getting into a lot of the details, but I will point them out. I'll try to avoid saying I told you so.
Well, an interesting thing there, though, is that one could say that one of these works was created based on historical realities, not necessarily adhering to the entirety of the story. But you know the old phrase, it's based on a true story.
Sure, but the thing about, let's go back to Zachariah Sitchin and the thing, he leaves out so many points that are critical. Like, for example, the biblical talks about a hybrid race, right? Mm-hmm. And that does exist in both historical and fictional works of the Babylonians and the Sumerians. Most the Babylonians came out, it was really the Sumerians and Akkadians, right? Mm-hmm. They talk about that, a mixture, these people that, you know, they were bragging that they learned directly from the gods and directly from their hybrids, and their leaders were these hybrids, right? And those are the Apkallu. And nobody talks about them. They talk about Anunnaki.
Well, these Anunnaki are the people that were leader. Like 16 feet tall, right?
Well, they could be, yeah. Could be. They didn't have to be. But, yeah, usually the Apkallu were hybrids, and the biblical text speaks of hybrids also. But the biblical text trumps the Sumerian text with its accuracy. And that's a whole other thing that we can get into, or I may never get into in public, because for me to do that, it's actually a full-time job, not a job, to do a proper presentation. And I don't think I don't seem interested. I put it this way. When you gain a certain amount of knowledge, it is its own reward, right?
Well, I understand. So, I'm just, you know, doing my job or job here.
Yeah. But the difference between a job and a job, right? So, but here's the interesting aspect of all this is that generally, if you're going to take anything from the past 2 hours or almost here, whatever, generally what the public thinks is right is not right at all. It's wrong, right? And you see.
Well,
so what's been put out is
you explained why, because as I say all the time, everything on the planet seems to be mislabeled, because every time I take a look at the meaning of a word and then take a look at how it's being applied to something, it appears as though it generally describes the opposite of what the thing actually is.
Right. Let me go back to help out. Maybe if there are biblical questions, this might fill in the blanks. And this has never been said in any of the alternative that I know of, because it's all dummy load anyway. You know that firsthand by having guests and stuff on that. You know, I'm sure you're like, I'm not whatever, you know, disparaging you or anyone. But, you know, it's like you got to fill 2 hours. This is not a 2 hour fill. This is a 2 hour. You got to sit down with a steak knife and you're going to hit a lot of bone. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is the aspect that I gave you earlier, that mankind was supposed to be divided into different groups that each have a patron or matron deity, which you see now, even today. Mm-hmm. What happened, the Creator did not take on one of these nations. Later on, he says, I'm going to come down to your level, meaning these other gods, these lower gods, and I'm going to take a nation just like you, just like a father who has all these children playing a game. When he goes to play with them, he comes down on their equal footing. He doesn't pick one up and throw him across the room because he's the dad, right? Mm-hmm. He's gentle. So he comes down, in other words, in his will, and he grabs a nation which he created out of Abraham. They're known as the Israelites. And he's going to take them under, and he says, okay, I'm going to be like the – you see how these other nations have gods? Now I'll be your god. I'm going to play like they do. And so I have my nation also. So that's why they're the quote-unquote chosen people, not – because the other ones weren't chosen at the time. The other ones were chosen to have each corresponding deity, you see. Right? That's why people still are wrestling with the Creator. And you hear stupid stuff like the God of the Old – you better, you know, believe in the God of the New Testament, not the God of the Old Testament. What are you talking about? It's the same – there is no new world. There is no – you know, it's like dividing the any literary work in an ad hominem way to suit your agenda. You can't do that. You know, that you hear that all the time with the Patriots, with the Constitution, right? They only quote things out of the Constitution that suits their agenda, right? So anyway, so basically, in essence, also the other reason why you watch why Israel is chosen, because they're a timepiece. These things will happen. When you see this happening to Israel over here, then the next thing is this. That's all. It's just like we choose a timepiece. It could be a stick in the ground with the sun, or the mechanical wind-up toy, right? Or an hourglass. We can pick a timepiece, you see.
Well, you know what's strange about that, though, is that there was attempts to found the nation-state of Israel in various other locations.
And it has been, like in the Oblast in Russia. Yeah, that was the first one that was formed in the 30s. Yeah,
right.
It still exists today. Yeah, but not in that capacity.
Yeah, but
this is different.
Well, what's odd to me though is that this attempt to found said nation didn't seem to have a geographical preference when they were doing
it. Here, I don't talk about this often because it needs to be explained, not described. You could say that there's a nation of Israel right now by description, but I'm telling you, it still hasn't been formed. because it's what's called secular right now. You know, the accords that the Rothschilds formed, what was the Balfour Accord, and all this, right? This is a product of that. This is still a private enterprise, and I've explained how it will change when it runs out of prime ministers. You've got two or three prime ministers left, most likely two. I've explained where that is. Do you remember?
Right.
This is why I will return to your former judges, which are prime ministers, right? A prime minister is a prime judge. And then you will be known as a righteous people, meaning as long as Israel has a prime minister, they're not going to do anything right. They're always going to be hated. So you're going to watch. I also gave the specifics. You know, if you read the book of Judges, it just lists the book of Judges. When you get to the 14th judge or 13th judge, it's Samson. All of a sudden, there's pages and pages dedicated to his story. Well, the Samson-type judge is coming up. Now, if you remember in the book of Judges, you know, he interacted very heavily with the Philistines, killing a lot of them, and there was a lot of intimidation back and forth, right? As a matter of fact, you heard of Firefox, the browser, right? Well, you know, what did Samson do? He took two foxes, he tied their tails together and set the foxes on fire, threw them into the field. Anyway, somebody knows what's going on, right? So anyway, so the next prime minister you're going to see, I've told this people who have, get out of the West Bank. If you know anybody who's Palestinian, you live in the West Bank, none of those people, well, very few are going to survive. We're talking about hundreds of thousands, probably 50,000, 100,000 Palestinians killed in the near future by the Israel. Could you imagine what's going to happen? What kind of a worldwide outcry is going to happen when that happens? The onslaught?
You know, I'm not really sure,
It's going to be enough to topple the current government, that's for sure.
Well, they have no problems with hundreds getting killed, you know, in retaliation for allegedly being killed or things like that.
They've killed about, well, the past 30 years, over 10,000 or less than that, and they've injured over 100,000 in the past five. So, no, but what I'm saying, it's a bloody, bloody thing. But what the outcome is going to be is the Gaza Strip expanding all the way up to Tel Aviv, which is the ancient city of Jaffa, which was their city. And they're going to be living in harmony, and they're actually going to fight together as time goes on. And all this is going to happen very quickly. What I'm speaking on is you know, within the next 7 years, within. So
Well, here's a Skype question, because you started talking about Israel. I knew that was going to do something.
That doesn't matter. They're hated, and they're supposed to be hated until they're not.
Well, but here's an interesting thing that was brought up actually in a recent discussion with Jordan Maxwell on the show.
Oh, boy. Okay, go ahead.
Which is kind of an interesting piece of feedback we're getting here. What about this position of a high judge in Israel being called a Nasi, N-A-S-I?
That's Judaism. Well, that's an extrapolation of what you call Judaism, which is a mishmash of Babylonian mystic rites mixed in with Mitzrayim rites, Egyptian rites, and some of the Samaritan rites.
Well, I've been describing that these are the on another series about how a lot of this has to do with a god of the moon, the god Saturn.
Well, Saturn is Kronos. Saturn is important because Saturn used to be used as a timepiece by certain priests, because just like we use the celestial bodies, you know, if you want to know when it's noon, how do you know when it's noon? You put a stick in the ground, right? Well, you don't really locate Saturn by putting a stick in the ground. And have you ever seen Saturn through a telescope, by the way? Not the photos they have online or magazines. It looks very – its position is very different. The rings don't go left and right. They go up and down. Are you familiar with that reality?
Yes.
Okay. And that has part of something to do with it. But to make a long story short, Judaism is not approved of biblically. You know that, right? Especially if you read in the New Testament, it's kind of the book of Mark, when the Christ is told to go to the Feast of Tabernacles, which were one of the ordained feasts. You know, he says, this is not my time. This is an evil time. This is not my time. In other words, you're not doing it on the right day. And what you're doing is not, you see?
Well, what's interesting is he also says that the old law has been abolished through him, too. Which
no, it doesn't. He never said that.
Well, that's what
I've read. Christians say that.
I've read it, though. It's in there. As one
well,
of those.
Go read it. Go read it in context again. It's not in there.
Okay. Well,
it doesn't say old law. No. And when law, you have to be very careful. When you say law, even today, what these patriot idiots, they always bring up, is that statutory law or common law? You ever notice that?
I believe the word used is covenant, but I'd have to
look
back.
Yeah, you could. The new covenant now is about that. You know what happens after you die. In other words, a new covenant now is proven, because in order to have a covenant, which is, an attachment, mm-hmm. right? Long story made short, there were two law forms going on at the time. You had the halakha, which was the protective law form that was taught to the people to shield them like a hedge so they wouldn't break the law and transgress the law. And eventually they forgot about the law and they studied and stuck to the hedge laws, the halakha, which means to hedge. You give you an example of that? Let's say the Bible, the scripture says you shouldn't eat pork. And they're like they're all wondering, how are we going to prevent the people from eating pork? Well, if we outlaw pork in the whole country, then they can't eat pork, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, let's do that. So now when people saw pork, they said, oh, that's outlawed in the country. They didn't think of the scripture saying you shouldn't eat it. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, for example, if the scripture said be in by, let's say, 6 o'clock, I'm using a paraphrased metaphor, they make a law saying you have to be in by 5 o'clock. So if you're a little late, you're still before it. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So then people started looking at these other laws to protect them from, you see, and they forgot about it. That's the one that's been done away with. In other words, all the ancillary bullshit stuff that took precedent over the real deal.
Fair enough. So as we get into the last...
And by the way, that's very clear when you study. If you read a short thing out of context, it's not clear at all what I just said.
Well, I just do remember reading that interesting area where it seemed to me to say that the old law had been
was
no longer valid. But
that's not so.
I'll go back over it and.
You have to do it when you go back over. You're going to have to be cumulative, because believe it or not, early on in the biblical text it gives you hints about what the law is about and how it's supposed to be administered and what will happen to it. So now you got to go all the way back to kindergarten. But anyway,
well, you know, sometimes you need a refresher to be able to fully grasp where you're going, you know. Not necessarily.
Or just, here's another suggestion for you and anyone else. Go find where you thought you read it and read it in context. That means go back and the setting. You know, go back, read the whole, aspect of it, a few verses before and a few verses after. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, this is a really good example. You know, when you talk about specific end time stuff with Christians, they say, no one knows the day or the hour, right? You ever hear that? They say that. No one knows the day or the hour. It's mm-hmm. in the Bible. Look. You familiar with that concept?
Well, yeah, I'm familiar with that concept, but also anytime I go to read something that's excerpted from something else, I always go to the before and after, because usually if you're cherry picking, you're forgetting about the rest of the branch, you know, and you're forgetting about the field. So.
All the Christians like to say no one knows the day or the hour. I know we got a few minutes here, but if you actually go two verses before, the question to the Christ was, you notice I didn't say Jesus or whatever. The question to the Christ was, when will the sun, the moon, and all these things, these heavenly bodies, pass away and cease to exist, is the question. And he says, no one knows the day or the hour when the sun and the moon and all that will cease to exist. But if you fall asleep, you'll miss my coming. Right? Mm. You see the context? So the question wasn't about when the mop-up crew comes. The question was, when do the heavenly bodies start to decay or fall away? You see? Mm-hmm. Okay. Years ago, when I was younger and dumber, I used to have a long and short list of all these biblical misconceptions. As a matter of fact, I made the error of previous sonic events always debunking a cliche, whether it was secular or religious or biblical. And it was just a waste of time. So, anyway.
No, fair enough. And like I was saying, you know, we're getting toward the very last couple of minutes here. Is there anything you want to sort of say in closing to this two-hour sonic event that occurred here? Interesting one. I actually found this one loaded with more information than we usually get to, actually. So... I'm real happy with it, and I hope everybody who is listening has also gained something once again, or possibly regained something.
Yeah, but I want to do a plug, by the way. Someone is doing a justgreekspeak.com website. It's not me. I'm not going to say I endorse it or don't endorse it. It's just someone that's likes what I've been saying, and they actually did a pretty polished website. It's called justgreekspeak.com. If you just do justgreekspeak.com, it'll show up. He asked me to to do a plug if I speak tonight, because he thinks he has some articles and quotes and things that are ready for public consumption. I personally have the uncommonradio.com, which I have nothing on there. There's no reason, like I said earlier. All I have is the email to get in touch with me. And that's what I wanted to maybe get in the last minute or so. And that's, you know, pretty much it. And you know, my motto's been, why bother? And the thing is, you know how they say don't think too much? But the thing is, how about just thinking a little bit, right? You know, how many times have you heard, oh, you think too much, right? Well, how about just think – what does that mean? Don't think at all, right? So,
right, and actually I'll provide links to both of those websites within the podcast to make sure it's there for anybody who says, oh, well, now I got to go back and listen to – no, I'll put it there for you. No problem. The individual that is doing the Just Greek Speak thing, I was looking at that actually, and noticed that he's got a list of the past Sonic events with you and I on there as well, because I was actually looking for an image online and I came across it. So
Good. Yeah, we did some things, you know, we did some good work together. It was a good way to like spill the beans a little bit. And here's the thing, I mean, if you don't pat your own back, who's going to pat your back? At least you say you did it first. No, the stuff that we discuss and you hear on Greek Speak, not because I'm – you're not going to hear anywhere else. And it hasn't been said anywhere else, period. And it doesn't matter where it goes or if you do anything with it. You know what matters, though? It's been said. It's been done.
Well, there you go, because after all, I asked the question very early on in our discussions, why is it that you're – bothering to say this, because you don't seem to want to bother to say this.
And, the thing is, why bother? Well, the thing is, look, yeah. If you're asked, you have, you know, you do it unless you have a good reason not to do it, right?
Well, fair enough, but also you said that at that time, anyway, the reason why I'm saying these things is because they're not being said. So I feel obligated to do so because... Go ahead.
Yeah, because you can't be held guilty or accountable later for knowing and not saying. You know, there's many old, stories about that, right? So, but right now you go on the, what I call the stupid rectangle, and everybody's parroting the Papagallo, right, in Italian. Everybody is parroting everybody else, quite secure. So.
Yeah, well, it seems like the majority do anyway.
I mean, cosmic censorship, dummy load, Pope's work schedule. Come on, where are you going to go to get that? Forget about it, right?
Well, that so, you know, that's the truth, and we certainly have done that. And this one is also unique. I think we're going to have to name this particular episode, and I'm pretty happy with calling it Heard. Okay, acknowledged, received, and
why bother? Yeah.
You know, or heard, understood, received, acknowledged, I think might be a good title. Either that or why bother? I don't know which one. But either way, Greek, I want to thank you
again
for
doing
this.
All right, Bubba, top of the hour.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And I know that everybody got something out of this. The Ocelli Effect is done for this entire week. Now I've got to produce Transresistor Radio coming up next. But, hey, you know what? It's been an interesting week. And, again, Jefferson Morley punked out on me, so I don't know why that is. All right, Greek, thank you again.
All right, ciao, brother.
Anyway, like I said, Transresistor Radio is up next. Remember this, I am Merely Ocelli. All of you listening, participating, donating, doing whatever it is you can for this show, even just going into the chat room, downloading, whatever, you are all the effect. Have a good night.